Golf Smarter Premium number 554, published on August 23, 2016, is brought to you by Golf Overnight. If you're about to take a vacation or a golf trip, don't have your clubs slow you down. This trip, have your clubs waiting for you when you arrive, not the other way around. This past weekend, I was telling a friend about Golf Overnight. He has three kids under the age of six and is planning to take the entire family to Hawaii in a few weeks. And I knew he was going to be playing golf there. So I told him about Golf Overnight and that he could have his clubs picked up at his club, delivered to the resort, and then shipped right back to his club with no hassle on his part. He immediately realized what an incredible savior it will be to have that extra set of hands available and how much his wife will appreciate his help while traveling. So he logged in and he booked it on the spot. And he saved 20% by using our exclusive promo code. That's GSMART, G-S-M-A-R-T, to save 20% at golfovernight.com. Or just click on their ad at the bottom of the homepage at golfsmarter.com. Mr. Hogan, the man I knew, with author and LPGA record holder Chris Cheddar.
This is Golf Smarter Premium. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Chris.
Great to be here, Fred.
It's great to have you on the show because you just entertain me to no end. We met.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. No, we met back at the ING conference in Utah, and we got to take a little shuttle bus ride together from the hotel to one of the golf courses. And it was so much fun. It was so interesting. I can't believe how much we got in just that 10-minute bus ride. And then you co-host another podcast called 18 Birdies, which it's called On Par by 18
yep,
Birdies.
The On Par podcast.
Right. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit, but I was a guest on your show with you and Josh, and we just had way too much fun, probably more fun than's legal.
Well, you know, that's the thing about podcasts. There's no formula. You just kind of, it takes you where you want to, you know, wherever. It doesn't matter.
Right, right. And
time limit.
To me,
theoretically.
There's no limits on geography or time. And that's probably my favorite parts about it because of, you know, I came from radio, and that was all about geography and time.
Yeah.
I mean, with the radio station I worked at in San Francisco, it was an FM station, and we just had no signal anywhere. So, you know, we never were able to reach our full potential. And then everything is a matter of minutes and seconds, you know? And here, just...
Yeah.
Like when Bobby Clampett was on the show a couple of weeks ago, I said, I know you're used to being on TV, but if I ask you a question, you can go on for as long as you'd like. I mean, you don't have to get it in within 9 to 18 seconds. And he's like, really? And so he gave me 10-minute answers. It was awesome.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And
he's
then I had to cut it off.
He
was a very interesting man.
Yeah, and nice.
He had this one comment that he made about the placement of your divot in relation to the ball and how that impacts your score. He says, for every inch behind the ball you are, that's four strokes. And I was like, okay, so I better go hit the ball differently. So anyway,
when I used to practice at Shady Oaks, Dave Eichelberger would come out and practice every now and then when he was in town, and he would leave these just perfect little rectangles where he was hitting balls, and he would just take just the tiniest bit of divot, and it was really something to see. I wish I would have taken a picture now.
It sounds amazing.
Something to aspire to.
So now, yeah, right, exactly. I mean, that's so many amateur golfers, and that's really what we focus on here. But when I talk to them, when I'm playing with them, and I ask them, where should the bottom of your swing be in relationship to the ball? And everyone, like, when they figure out what that means, it's like something they've never even thought about before. But when they figure it out, they're like, yeah, right behind the ball. It's like, boom. That's the problem. right?
Yeah.
It's got to be in front of the ball. Watch how these divots, these great divots these guys are putting out on the tour are way in front of the ball. And that's what they talk about, hit down to make it go up. What? Right? Swing easy so it'll go farther. What?
Yeah. Oh, I had a great teacher, Raymond Gafford, when I was in living in Fort Worth, actually. And he always said, we don't want to hit the ball further. We want to hit it better. And that's always stuck with me.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. I can see that. Okay. Anyway, hi. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
So let's start talking about your professional golf career. And there's other topics I want to hit, but let's establish your career, who you are in the golf world, and what that means to us as far as amateur golf. Give me a little bit, and then I'll pick it up.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me.
No, I don't need to do that. I read about it, but it's more interesting to hear your perspective.
Do
you need to answer that? Is your phone ringing or is it mine?
It was. It's my dad.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Dad.
Sorry you're not invited on the podcast right now. Do you have to talk to him?
No. Okay. I'll call him back later. I called him the other day, though. I was playing in a pro-am, and very first green, it's a scramble. We missed the green. Oh, I'm sorry. And it was a driver 8-iron. We all missed the green.
Wow.
So we get to the back of the green, and I said to my guys, I said, you know, my dad always said, can't chip in unless you're off the green. And they're like, oh, yeah, okay. And we do it. We chip in. So
awesome.
I had to call him.
Oh, that's great.
He loved it.
You can't chip it in unless you're off the green. All right, that's a quote. We'll write that one down.
His last words. His other quote that I always remember was, I may not always be right, but I never think I'm wrong.
I have a friend. I was thinking of having a t-shirt made for him that says, always right. No, wait. Sometimes right, always sure.
Yeah, I like that.
And my favorite quote, a golf quote, came from a listener, that which is, never follow a bad shot with a stupid shot.
I like that, too. That's good.
Oh, man, that has become a way of life for me. It's like, don't even, just because you can see the green through the trees, doesn't mean you're going to make it. And if you don't put your ball back in the fairway, you're going to double bogey, triple bogey at best, right? And if you just put it on the green, you'll bogey. Why are you trying to be a hero? Stop it.
Can I use that? I've been doing a Tuesday tip on Facebook. Actually, I think I've got a friend who's kind of helping me get a little better with my social media. And so we've started this Tuesday tips thing. And that might be a good one for one of those Tuesdays where I don't have a whole bunch of time.
Absolutely. Write it down. As long as you give Golf Smarter credit for it. That's
all right.
That's
all
right. Fine. And Tuesday tips, why don't you just come back on the Golf Smarter podcast and give us the Tuesday tips? Because that's when we publish the show each week.
There you go. Well, I think I'm game. You know, I'm game.
All right. I love it. All right. Let's talk about your playing career.
Okay, so
let's start. You want to start in college, or you want to start the first time I picked up a golf club?
I'm going to start when I was 10 years old. As an afterthought, my parents decided to, they were taking my older brother to the Junior World out in San Diego. And as an afterthought, they were like, oh, would you like to play? There's a 10 and underage group. And I said, sure. Okay, sounds like fun. And I finished second.
Wow.
And so I came home with the big trophy and everyone was saying congratulations.
And your brother?
I kind of liked that.
Wait.
He didn't play well that week.
And he hasn't talked to you since?
No, actually, that's so funny. We never had sibling rivalry. We wanted to be partners. And I wanted to be his partner because he was really good. He was such a better player than I was. I mean, he was really good. This is what I think about playing with my brother. We'd finish and I'd go, what'd you shoot? You know, I'm thinking he's going to say 73, you know, 74. What'd you shoot? 67. Really? I mean, it, and it wasn't, he just, he was a little bit wild, but he was, had great imagination, chip, get it up and down. He hit it a long way, so the par fives just were pretty easy for him. Great player. Played, you know, he tried to play on tour and he just could never get through tour school, which, as we know, is difficult. But he had a lot of success. You know, he played in Asia, he played in Canada. You know, he's a great player.
Okay, so you came back and you had the trophy.
Had the trophy. And I think that's what really kind of got me, you know, interested. I really kind of liked that. And I always played growing up, and I grew up in South Dakota, so I had a lot of success there. Sort of the big fish in the small pond.
Okay.
And then I went to school at TCU. And that was, you know, I mean, that was sort of not a rude awakening, but you know, I was around a lot of really good players and enjoyed it. We had a lot of coaching changes at TCU, so our team didn't have a whole lot of success, but I just always knew that I would try it. I always said I'd qualify and do it for a few years and then start my real life. Who knew I wouldn't start my real life until this year? My first job out of college with 18 birdies.
Oh my gosh. Really? Because you've been playing golf
Yeah.
the whole time. See, it's your first
Yeah.
time you've had a job.
I was talking to a friend of mine and she said, "So, gosh, Chris, when's the last time you had a paycheck?" And I went, "Never." She goes, "Well,
Wow.
congratulations on your first job out of college. Parents must be so proud."
I'm sure they were really proud way before that, too.
Well, what was funny is my dad over on the phone here, no, he's not on the phone. he really tried to talk me out of it. When I said I wanted to turn pro and play on tour, he tried to talk me out of it.
Wow.
He said, "Oh, are you sure? That's a really, it's a hard job, and it's, you know, you're traveling. It's just, you know, it's not a great life." And I was like, "No, I want to do it." And once he realized that I wasn't going to be deterred, he was very supportive.
And so even now he's like, okay, you made the right decision. This has been so much
Yeah. Oh,
fun.
yeah.
Yeah.
He caddied for me quite a bit my first few
Wow.
years on tour. Actually, probably my first 10 years on tour. He probably caddied anywhere from 3 to 7 tournaments a year. He
Wow.
would show up never for practice rounds. Every now and then for the pro-am and then the tournament. One of the funny stories about him is one time he did caddy in the pro-am. And on about the 17th hole, he pulls out $20 and he's getting the guys together in my group. And he's like, "Hey, I think we should all give the caddy $20." And they're looking at him. They're going, "Doc, you are the caddy." He's like, "Oh, I know,
Oh,
but this guy's been doing all the work." And they're
that's
like, "Okay,
so
that's
cute.
great, but it's not your responsibility to tip the caddy."
That's a great story.
Isn't that
But it's like,
funny?
no, you should tip me. I'm good.
Yeah.
All right, so you went on and you played college golf. Let's get to there.
So I played college golf at TCU, and they were national champions the year before I got there. And
Wow.
then we, yeah, had a lot of coaching turnover. And so I actually had five coaches my years at TCU.
Wow.
So that was, you know, just, it was just, it ended up being a lot of rebuilding. But I loved it. You know, I'm pretty happy wherever I am. People ask me, "What's your favorite golf course?" And I go, "Whichever one I'm playing on that day."
I feel exactly the same. It's like, what's your favorite one? The last one?
Yeah.
I love being out there. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Oh, do you have courses that you hate?
You know, there's some courses that I probably, yeah, I mean, I would say there's some that I kind of, they don't fit my game or for whatever reason, but not, you know, I mean, not too many, I would say. You
Right.
know, for me, if the greens are good, that makes me happy. You know, I want the greens to be somewhat, I like fast greens and somewhat smooth,
Yeah, I think
but
that that's the thing
yeah.
that people will complain about when they walk away from a course is not so much, not so much the rough, not so much the trees. If they're three putting a lot, it's a miserable day for them.
Well, but that's not the greens' fault.
Oh, I know, but it's easy to blame the greens
I
because
know,
they're
well,
so
yeah.
hard to read, they're too fast, they're too slow. There's always an excuse.
Here's the thing I've noticed.
What's that?
Good putters, they putt well on even when the greens are bad. I mean, they really do. They figure out a way to get it in the hole and they roll it well. The better you roll it, the more putts you're going to make. So bad putters on bad greens, I think it accentuates the problem.
Well, okay. So then the question is, how do you become a good putter?
I think the best way to become a good putter is to simply learn to roll the ball end over end. I put a line on my ball in the, you know, just like, you know, in maybe an inch and a half long, and I stick it sort of under the ball, but on the line that I'm trying to hit it. So you know how some people set the ball down and they try to make it perfect? I think that's hard to do. And I'll do it sometimes on me like a 10-footer or 5-footer or something like that. But for the most part, I put it underneath and then I get that feedback. If I hit a good putt and it's rolling end over end and you don't see any wobble in that line, you know you've rolled it well. And if you can just learn how to do it, and there's really no one answer, it's sort of different for everyone. Like certainly hitting it in the middle of or hitting it on the sweet spot of the club, and that all helps. But there's just you just have to learn how to do it yourself, really.
Yeah. Any training aids that you've seen that you think could help?
Help with that.
Yeah. I know that there's that one aid that I've seen recently that just it's only about an inch or so wide, but it's open on either side and it rolls, and so you can really see if it's wobbling or if it's
Oh,
not.
yeah. Well, yeah, that could maybe help you do it, but I find some of those so hard to do that sometimes, you know, it becomes you get negative feedback.
Well, I've seen so many
And
training aids coming through here, and some of them it's like you use it once and went, okay, that's too much effort, or it's not giving me enough of what I'm looking for.
well, every aid works for someone, but not every aid works for everyone.
Good point.
Yeah. I mean, they're all made because they worked for someone.
For the guy who made it.
Well, yeah, and whoever. I mean, they're going to be good for some people, but every training aid is not good for everybody. It's just like I don't think that you can say there's one way to swing a golf club. And if there's a teacher who it's his way or the highway, I think that that's doesn't that's he's not a good teacher. He or she is not a good teacher because people don't take into consideration people's you know, just what's the word I'm looking for? Their limitations. When my back is bad, I can't stay down through the ball for anything. And you know, people, I always hear people be like, "Ah, why don't I just stay down?" Which, you know, yeah, I felt that way. But sometimes you physically can't do it, and your body knows when you can't do something. Your body knows when you're either going to hurt yourself or there's going to be pain. And here's my example. When my hips were bad, I would say to myself, like, I don't care if it hurts. I just need to do, you know, I need to stay down through the ball or whatever it was. I'm not going to let the pain get me. But I could not, even though I was not aware of pain, I was not aware of feeling pain, but my body wouldn't let me go in places. So the whole point to that long story was that people have to, you know, they have to learn to swing the way that they can swing and not you know, not everything is going to work for everybody.
Sure. Sure. I think that's part of what Bobby Clampett talked about, is like your swing is your swing. I mean, there are interesting and unique swings all over the tour. It's all about having the club face square at contact and just getting it there.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's very true.
All right. Now I'm going to pick apart your tour time. So you played at TCU. You did well at TCU. You won some... couple times, yeah. You won some player of the year type awards, type of things. Do I have to tell you about
All Southwest? Yeah, probably. I don't really know. All Southwest Conference, and you know, whatever.
Yeah. Oh well, that's good. Okay, then you went to the tour. You went pro. Dad's finally supported you, and you went pro.
He supported me early. I mean, once he knew that I wanted it. He was very supportive.
Yeah. And how was life on the tour?
I loved it. I lost my card my first year and had to go back to tour school. And that was harder than going to tour school the first time because I knew what I would be missing. And I just really loved it out there. And I got my club stolen the last tournament of the year. I was flying home and got my club stolen. And I had to go to tour school in 4 days.
With clubs you don't have. Now with you've got to get started.
And this was, so I was at Dallas is where I was living. And I actually saw my clubs go around on the belt. And I was on the phone. And I was like, okay, I see my clubs. And then when I went to get them, they were gone.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, that's terrible. Well, at least... the time that I lost my clubs on a flight, the baggage attendant was accused of taking them, but they didn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Wow. Was your name on your bag?
I don't think so.
Wow. Someone just picked up the wrong bag.
Well, it was,
the tour bag.
So that's how I ended up using Mr. Hogan's sand wedge at tour school, because the one club I had trouble getting my driver matched, and then the sand wedge, I just couldn't quite get the sand wedge that I liked. And my sand wedge was made, it was a replica of his.
Okay.
So he just gave me his sand wedge to use for tour school.
Wow. We have a lot to talk about Mr. Hogan. I love the way you call him Mr. Hogan. But I'm not going to get there yet. We are going to get there. You did have... I've talked to other tour players, and they're like, yeah, I only won once. I only won 4 times on the tour, and I played for 20 years. It's like, yeah, but you won on the tour. Does that not count?
Well, I mean, it's frustrating to...
Sure.
You know, I won the mixed team with Billy Andrade in 1991, and then I won my first tournament in 1992. And I remember, what's so funny is I remember feeling, you know, while I was so excited, it was almost kind of like, well, this just, it kind of felt like this is how it's supposed to happen.
Right.
You know, I mean, I felt like I was going to win much more.
Sure.
And for whatever reason, you know, I just didn't. And that, so, you know, I mean, we look back and go, oh man, I wanted to win more.
Sure.
But you know what? I think that even if you won however many times you won, you still would always want to win more.
So when you win and you're thinking, yeah, this is where I belong, I should be able to win more. Do you... What happens in your head? Do you start thinking, oh, this is getting easier? This is an easy game? Or I have to work harder? Where does that take you? Because I think about last year in Jordan Spieth and the tremendous success that he had. And then this year, the press is just berating him and to his face that he's not having such a great year. And yet he's like, no, I feel like I'm doing well. I'm just not winning.
Yeah.
Where does that put you? I mean,
I totally agree with that philosophy that he, you know, if you look at it, whoever's number one, when Tiger was number one, or when Tiger and Annika were both number one and they were just dominating, I kept saying, this is not going to last. Well, it lasted. I was wrong. It lasted a long time. But golf is hard to dominate. It's hard. It's streaky. You know, there's some stat that golfers make like 75% of their money in 10% of the tournaments.
Wow.
And it's usually in a streak of 3 or 4 weeks. You know, they have that really good, whatever, 3 or 4 weeks where they make the bulk of their money. And it's I think very, very hard to just be consistent and just constantly play well. So, you know, there's a lot of just the getting the breaks that week or whatever. And yes, it probably all evens out in the end. But, you know, I think that's great that he's staying patient and he's saying, look, I'm playing great. You know, I'm doing what I'm doing. And that was kind of how I felt, like, you know, yeah, this was how I was supposed to feel. And I won. And I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing because I felt like I was on the right path. So I always struggled with my putter. And the week I won, I putted well. I didn't putt outstanding, but I putted well. And I would say that I had very few tournaments in my career where I didn't make some mistakes putting. You know, I always seem to have a three putt or miss a, you know, just that 2 or 3 footer. And it never felt like it was just from lack of focus or whatever. It was just, for whatever reason, I was a bit of an inconsistent putter.
Well, it seems like even on the tour level, it's hard to get all elements of your game working on the same day. I mean,
yeah,
if you break it down to like four elements, right? Off the tee, your iron play, short game, and putting. Right, I guess.
Yep.
Put those, and it's hard to make them all work on the same day. And when they do, it's a beautiful thing, and you don't want to talk about it while it's happening because you're afraid it's going to disappear that quickly too.
Yeah, I can remember feeling, you know, just feeling like, oh my gosh, I've really got this. I you know, just feeling so good about my game, and then when it goes the other way, it's you're going, I am never going to find it again. You know, you just, and the thing is, you just have to look at it rationally and just say, I felt that way. Now I'm feeling this way. I know it's going to be this way again.
Right.
But it's sometimes that's hard to remember.
Well, and golf is really, if you like a sport that has a lot of parity, then the golf is the ultimate in parity. It's so hard to dominate a sport. I think that teams that or people that can dominate are good for the sport because they get more people either loving or hating that team, that person, right?
Yeah.
And they get more interested in it. That dominating a sport is actually good for a sport. I know there's a lot of people who, you know, like during the 50s in baseball when New York just, you know, either the Giants, the Yankees, or the Dodgers were in the World Series every year, and they called that the golden age of baseball, and yet everywhere else in the country, they hated the 50s because their team never had a chance. So, anyway. But you mentioned Annika, and you came in close second behind her on a major.
Well, I'm not sure I'll call it close second, but thank you. She actually walked away with the tournament. And I remember going out on Sunday and really feeling like we were playing for second place, unless she stumbled, which you just didn't expect Annika to do.
Sure.
But you know, hey, you never know. So, that was still in the back of your mind, but I remember really feeling like, all right, let's get second if we.
And-
you know, if she doesn't.
How much did you get second by?
I think it was like 5 shots.
Oh, really?
When I finished, I think I was in the 4th to the last group. When I finished, it was a U.S. Open record. low 72 hole round.
For you?
So I had the record.
You had the record, but Annika crushed you. Wow.
She finished 45 minutes later, and then she had the record.
So you held the record for 45 minutes. That's pretty awesome.
I held the low scoring round record for less than 24 hours at Colonial. I think it was like the low 18 hole score on Saturday or something like that. And then, no, it must have been the low 18 hole score because Beth Daniel broke it the next day.
Oh, man. And Maya Kama is a very exclusive private course here in Northern California. And a neighbor of mine joined the club. He was one of the very first members that joined while they were still in construction. And he told the guy after taking the tour of the course, he says, all right, I will join, but you have to let me be the very first person off the tee. And the guy's like, sure, we're happy to take your money, but why do you need to be the first guy off the tee? He says, because I want to hold the course record.
That's funny. I love it. He's like, and I'm going to be playing by myself.
Exactly. Oh, he loved the competition.
I do still hold one record.
What's that?
And it is low 9-hole score in the British Open.
Really?
Yeah.
The women's on the LPGA side.
Yes. Yes.
And tell me more about that.
Yes, it's an interesting story.
Please. Awesome.
Low 9-hole score. And I played, I can't even remember, but my front nine, I shot 40, which was 5 over.
Uh-oh.
And I shot 29, which was 8 under on the back side.
Oh, man.
So on a day that I shot 69, I shot 8 under on 1-9.
Wow. Did you have eagles or was it like a par and 8 birdies?
I had 2 eagles.
I made a
5-footer for an eagle on 1 par 5. And then I chipped in on the last hole and I had no idea that I had done it. So the backstory was that my husband at the time was caddying for me, and on the ninth hole, he wanted me to hit an 8-iron and I wanted to hit a 9, and we sort of went back and forth. And normally I'm pretty good about, you know, just being like saying this is what I'm going to do and doing it, but I was 5 over par at the time. And I just said, you know, fine. So I hit the 8-iron. It one hopped over the green, and I was hot. I ended up getting it up and down for par, but I shot 40. I shot 5 over. So we go to the back 9, and I am like, I'm done. I'm not going to say one word to him. And I didn't. I just played, and I was just fuming. And I end up chipping in on the last hole to shoot 8 under. And he's standing there just shaking his head. And he's like, oh, you just drive me crazy. Do you know what you shot? And I said, no. And at the time, he was thinking that it was 28 because, you know, the 9-hole scores. And I was like, really? And he goes, yeah, you just shot 8 under.
Wow.
And I knew I was playing well, but I just, you know, you just kind of get it going and you don't really think about it. But
you were playing it with anger, which is, you know, you're supposed to keep your emotions in check. I guess you were angry at some, it was directed away from golf.
I was angry partly because I was mad at myself for, you know, just letting him talk me into something that I knew was right, which was stupid. But it wasn't like, I don't think people could see that I was upset. I was just like, I'm not going to talk to him about anything right now. And he was my teacher. So, you know, that was just one of those things where it's hard, you know, it's hard to spend a lot of time with the person, you know, you're married to, they're caddying, and he was my teacher.
And your coach, sure.
So, but we usually did pretty well together. He was, you know what, he was a great, well, first of all, he's a great teacher. I mean, just he's a fantastic teacher. And he was a great caddy when I was playing well. And I think that that was part of my frustration is he wasn't a very good caddy when I wasn't playing well. And that would frustrate me at times because I knew even though I wasn't, you know, winning or, you know, up in the top, I knew that every stroke meant, you know, money on Sunday night. And so I would get frustrated when I would see him sometimes get negative when things weren't going well. That's probably my number one thing that I want in my caddies is I want them to always stay positive.
And do you play with a regular caddy, or do you have to use a different caddy every time you're playing?
I have a regular caddy who's retired from the LPGA as well, but he'll come out and caddy for a couple of Legends events every year. So I think he'll probably caddy in three or four events this year. Yeah,
Oh,
four
wow.
events this year.
How many events are you playing each year now?
It depends. This year we only have, I think we only have like eight events on the Legends Tour this year, but the year before we had 10. So it kind of goes up and down.
Okay. All right. And how long have you been playing on the Legends Tour? And that's what it's that's
That's kind of a
the
personal question because
female equivalent of the Legends is the Champions Tour for the
is the
men?
Champions Tour,
Okay.
yes. Our age limit is 45. So I've been playing my first, and you can play the year you turn 45. And my birthday is December 30th.
Oh,
So the
wow.
year that I turned 45, I was 44 most of the year. I was still playing on the LPGA then. So I think I only played in one event that year.
I see. I see.
So, but you know, it's great. I mean, I don't practice nearly as much as I used to, obviously. And probably, you know, at this age, you shouldn't. It's can be hard on your body to have to, you know, be out there and hit so many balls. I do wish I could practice a little bit more, but
Life gets in the way too.
okay, you're just going to start laughing here in a minute.
Why? Oh, a cat just arrived in front of the screen. What was that? It's a cat's tail. Okay.
Yeah, I know, it's so funny. And I don't know if you know this about cats, but it's not like you can tell them no.
Right, exactly. But is the cat going to turn off your computer? You told me that the cat turned off your computer earlier.
This
I
one
hope
won't.
while
That
we're
was
not talking.
a different cat.
Oh, you're one of those people with you're a cat lady person.
I draw
Okay.
the line at two. I draw the line at
Yeah,
two.
right.
But
Until you're completely retired, and then there's 12 more.
Yeah, scare me. I have always been a dog person, but I'll tell you what, I brought the first cat home for my 8-year-old and when she was eight, and I couldn't believe how much I liked him.
Really?
We actually went to the pound to get a dog, and we came home with another cat.
Oh my. It's not going to
But
happen in my
we
house.
did finally get a dog.
Hello, kitty.
Yeah, hi
Hey,
kitty.
kitty. I can see
This
the
you know,
kitty.
when we got her, I know you can't see. Yeah, see, there's no talking to him.
You can't say, "Give me a
If
kiss, kitty."
she wants to meet you, she will.
Okay, well, she doesn't want
But
it. She can't smell me, so she doesn't care.
can you hear that? Now she's rubbing her face on the microphone.
Knock it off, kitty. All right,
Yeah.
let's get to part two of this conversation. Maybe we'll have three
Can we
parts.
say ADD?
Yes. Yeah. Squirrel. Okay.
Yeah.
So, right. I want to hold up in front of the screen here your book, which is just this adorable little book, but it's a great read called Mr. Hogan, The Man I Knew. An LPGA player looks back on an amazing friendship and lessons she learned from golf's greatest legend. Wow. This has got to be more than just a golf story.
It is. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. It is a story. It's really more of a memoir than it is, I don't know what people think if they pick up the book and they think they're going to learn something. I think they might learn some things.
Okay, so
but
tell
it
me
really
Hogan's secret.
Is more of a memoir.
Come on, you've been with him. You talked to him. You've got to know a secret, right? Everybody know. Every teacher always says, "I know the secret to Ben Hogan."
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And I said that I think that that was all a big, it was just hype where he said, oh, I've got this article I want to write. And then everybody thought, oh, he's got, there's a secret.
No secret?
I don't think so.
I mean, you knew him. So tell me how you knew him, how that, and what your relationship was with him.
Well, so my brother and I were going to school at TCU, and he heard that
Is
they
Dad
were
calling back again. I just
oh, you can hear that. It's so
I can
funny.
Feel
I
it. Because, I can feel it vibrating.
Yeah, I think because I've got the headphones on.
Oh, all right. Let's put it on the floor so it doesn't shake the table.
It doesn't
Sorry.
Keep bothering you.
Okay, so tell me about your relationship with Mr. Hogan.
So we became members at Shady Oaks, and everybody told us, you leave Mr. Hogan alone, you don't talk to him. If he wants to talk to you, he will, but you do not talk to him. And so at first, that's what I did, but I would see other members walk by, and I'd, hi, 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 and then I'd see him, and I'd act like I didn't see him.
How old were you at this point?
I was 18.
Okay.
I was, just a freshman in college.
Okay.
And then I thought, I'm just going to be myself because this is not me. And so I would see him and I'd wave or say hello. And then he just started stopping and he would maybe give me a little tip here or there. And I can remember like the first time he stopped by and he gave me a tip and I called home that night. I'm like, oh my gosh, Mr. Hogan stopped. He talked to me, and I was so excited about it. And, but then it would happen. And then it just kind of started, I just started to get it to know him better and better and became more and more comfortable. Like, then another time he stopped and he was trying to get me to do something. And I kept saying, well, let me see you do it. No, I don't hit anymore. Oh, come on. Let me just see. And finally he drops these three balls and he hits them, and I'm calling home. I saw Mr. Hogan hit three balls today.
Oh my gosh.
But then it got to the point where he started getting his clubs on the cart and getting his shag bag and coming out and he started hitting balls again, which was, really, really neat. And I would maybe just drive over to where he was hitting and I would watch him a little bit. And then he would come to where I was hitting and he would watch me hit. And then he would put his balls down and he'd hit. We'd go pick him up and, go do it again. And most of the time he would only hit, maybe one or two shag bags. And he was just always a tinkerer. He would have me try things and I think more than anything, I learned just about managing my game and practicing different shots and, how to play golf.
Wow. The first time that he stopped to talk to you while you were hitting balls, did you feel his eyes burning? Playing in front of thousands of people is one thing, but playing in front of Ben Hogan has got to be a completely different kind of pressure.
Yeah, I think that by the time that had happened, I'd gotten fairly comfortable with him. Yes, okay, it's the first time I'm going to hit a shot in front of him. But I think also I really didn't realize how much of a legend he was.
Oh.
I wasn't as scared as I should have been.
And there's great photos of you. It's not a tough book to read and it's a great book to read. And it's still available on Amazon, right?
Yep. You can also get it on my website if you want it personalized.
Wow.
Yeah, you can
great
just,
gift.
There you go.
That's a great gift.
Well, I know when it first came out, people were saying, oh, I want to send my book to you and then have you send it back. And I just thought that just sounds so hard. So I put it on my website so that it would be a little easier.
Oh, that is great. And there's some great quotes on the back just talking about you're not going to learn how to play golf from this, but you're going to hear a story that of a person that you think you know and you don't. And it's just really phenomenal.
I was lucky that he let me get to know him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he let me get to know this side of him that he just didn't really let many people see.
How much had to do with the fact that you're a woman?
I think a lot, actually. I think, although he really loved my brothers too. He really took all of us under his wing. Mm. And for whatever reason, I think the fact that I'm outgoing and I loved golf. So my brother Mike loved golf, but he wasn't outgoing. And my brother Eric is outgoing, but he didn't love golf. I take that back. He loved playing golf, but he didn't love practicing. So I had that one combination that really clicked with Mr. Hogan. And but he loved it. He loved when Eric would come out, because every now and then Eric would come out and Mr. Hogan would call that the sideshow. He'd say, is the sideshow going to happen today? You know, and that man is Eric coming out, because, you know, Eric was just he's so funny, and he was a talker, and they would be, you know, laughing and joking, and it just brought it to a whole new level. And when he was with just me and Mr. Hogan, you know, there was still a lot of talking going on, because I'm a talker. You know, I didn't hear until years later the stories about Mr. Hogan, you know, practicing and having, you know, someone might stand there 10 feet from him watching, and he would never say a word to him. Now, me, if somebody stands 10 feet, I'm like, hey, what'd you think of that one? How'd that one look? You know? And it was constant. You know, I would hit a shot and I would say something, or he would hit a shot and I'd say something.
Oui.
The whole time. And I had no idea that you know.
That's against protocol.
Was the first time in his life that had happened to him.
Wow.
He kept coming back.
Okay. And so you're not going to let it go.
Yeah. You know,
at what point in your life did you realize, oh my God, I got to spend a lot of time with Ben Hogan?
Probably when I started writing the book. Here's a funny story. I didn't really tell many people about it because people didn't believe me. You know, I mean, I would lose credibility if I said something, because they just didn't believe that it really was possible. You know, you hear all these stories about him. And so, when I was writing the book, one of my caddies, who I was really good friends with, I said, hey, I want to send you these chapters, and will you read them for me and tell me what you think? And he's like, sure. So I send him the book, or the chapters, and then I hear, he calls me back, and he says, Cheddar, I had no idea that you knew him this well. I said, Brooksy, what did you think I was writing, you know, the book about if I didn't know him? He's like, well, to be honest with you, I was really wondering how you could have enough material for a book.
Oh.
He goes, I walked the fairways with you for 3 years. I had no idea.
Wow. That's so cool. What a great story. What a great story. Well, highly recommend it. Definitely. And get it on. It's Chris.
Just chrischeddar.com.
But Cheddar is TSCHETTER. And I will have links in our show notes so you can go right to the book, go right to her website, order the book, and she can personalize it if you want that. Or just get it on Amazon. Either way is fine. All right, let's move on now. Let's talk a little bit about 18 Birdies, your first paycheck out of college.
My first job out of college.
tell me about 18 Birdies. Is an app that incorporates many things for the recreational golfer.
Well, yes. I mean, it, for any golfer, really, it's a mobile app, and you can keep your score, you can keep track of your bets, which I love. You can keep your stats. We've got a tournament platform now, and the GPS is fantastic. I mean, when I open that GPS up and I show it to people, and then I show them, I don't think people realize how you can actually move the cursor around, and you can get yardages, you know, to bunkers and over bunkers and through fairways. That's the thing, you know, for good golfers, a lot of times you got to pick the right line so that you, you know, don't go through the fairway. I can't wait to use it actually this week at French Lick, because this course is one of those where if you bite off too much, you don't carry the fairway. And if you don't bite off enough, you'll go through. And so 18 birdies is going to be awesome there.
Is it legal for you to use that?
Oh, well, I'll use it in the practice round.
Oh, okay. Okay. And
no, probably wouldn't be able to use it in the tournament.
So I, when I'm playing, I have a GPS that's also a rangefinder. I don't know why Bushnell didn't push this harder. I think it's like the best product that I've ever seen. I even bought it on eBay. It's a rangefinder that I can, you know, look at the flag and tell me exactly how far the flag is. But it also gives me a readout of front, middle, back of the green. So,
oh, that's nice.
It's really helpful.
But like with a rangefinder, you can't get that off the tee.
Right.
You know, you can sort of shoot a bunker, but you're not really 100% sure.
Right. Exactly.
You know, so that's the difference, I think, with the GPS.
Well, also with the rangefinder, if you're on, and I live in Northern California where we have, very rare are we playing on level ground. So you can't see the flag. It's hidden. It's up above too high. You just can't get a read of what it is. And what I liked about 18 birdies is the GPS that it brings up. You can just put your finger on the screen. You get an overview of the hole from a satellite view. So it's not like an animation or anything. And you can put your finger down anywhere on your screen and it'll tell you how far that shot is, which is really important. That's, to me, is one of the more, like, how far do I need to go from here to there? But also gives you the line and tells you where you can land. There's just a lot of things about using the GPS on 18 birdies, the satellite view, that is so helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
But there's so many more things about 18 birdies that's really cool, like the social aspect of it.
Yep. And yeah, we've got a great feed. And that's really, you know, when I started working for 18 birdies in January, the thing that I really, really liked about everyone there is that they want to make this the best. And, you know, it's not even close to where it's going to be. And it's already really great. But they want to listen to what people have to say, and they want to fix problems and make it, you know, as good as it can be. And right now, that's one of the things we're really working on, the feed, where, you know, you can interact with people and get lots of, you know, golf news and interesting golf, you know, golf everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's getting better and better, and it's really exciting. I think that I'm doing something that I would have done had I not played, you know, golf for 24 years on tour.
Who found who? How did you get together with them?
I actually got a call from a friend who is a job recruiter, and she said, this tech company is looking for someone who's played golf at a high level and is looking for, you know, it's a full-time job. I was like, I'll talk to him.
Sure.
So, yeah.
And is it a full-time job, or is it just like a PR job? You just go out and shake hands and say hi.
It's sort of in between. I mean, it is a full-time job. I do a lot of phone calls, and I sort of work across the board giving sort of the golf perspective, but I'm leaning towards like the marketing and the advertising. And that's what I mean when I said, you know, if I hadn't played golf, I probably would have gone into marketing, advertising. And the beauty is that they, part of the deal was they wanted me to keep playing because I love playing. And, you know, a real full-time job, I probably wouldn't be able to, you know, go off and play Legends events, sure, you know, every so often. So that's part of it. I'm director of community relations. So I sort of bring people together. And of course, my friends are all, you know, they just think that's so funny because that seems to be what I'm good at, is connecting people. Like, you know, somebody will say, hey, do you know someone? Oh yeah. Oh, I've got someone for you to talk to. And if I don't know the person directly, I probably will figure out a way to get them, you know, somebody in between to get them together. So
perfect. And I got to say, from what I saw out at the ING conference in Utah, 18 birdies has got to have the best swag I have ever seen from any company. And I mean, I'm talking about big golf companies that spend a tremendous amount on their promotional products. But you guys have the coolest stuff.
Thank you. Yeah.
And when you're playing in these events, are you just wearing 18 birdies swag? Are you just sporting it all?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And carrying a bag with you to hand out to people all kinds of good stuff?
I probably should do that. I'm not, but I should. I mean, it's not like my caddy has to carry that bag anymore.
Exactly. And you're in a cart, probably.
Yeah.
So give me a list of your favorite swag from 18 Birdies, and how can we get some of it?
I really am partial to the bottle opener that's disguised as a divot tool.
Okay, so you like to gamble and you like to drink on the golf course. We've learned two things that you won't even tell us, but we've read between the lines here.
Yeah, just figuring it out. And I love our hat that have the different lines on it. Like, this is how I roll. I really like that hat.
Okay. And you've got a good new ad campaign going right now too. You get some great videos. It's about what, the Marshalls?
Is that the Marshall? Yeah, we are. The idea was to have this character who, you know, the Marshall, where everyone's like, oh no, but our Marshall is fun and a little bit irreverent.
Cool. All right, you got to go to check that out. I guess it's on YouTube. 18 Birdies. 18. And then is it a space and then the word birdies?
No space.
18 birdies.
Yeah. And our website is 18birdies.com.
But most importantly, it's an app. It's an iPhone and Android?
Android.
Yeah. So you can just go to the app store and you can find 18 Birdies and it's free. That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. And you guys have a podcast.
And we do, yes. The On Par podcast.
I had so much fun with you and Josh on that. That was just crazy. I mean, because I'm generally the one asking questions. And when someone wanted to ask me questions, oh boy, you got an hour?
Yeah, no, that was lots of fun. We'll have to do it again.
Oh, yeah. And you're going to have to come back here, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. We're going to wrap this up with your favorite golf tip for amateurs when you're out there playing these pro-am events. I'm sure you don't go, can I give you one tip? But in your head, you've got many tips that you'd like to share with amateurs. What's your favorite?
Oh, well, it really depends. But, you know, I find that just getting people to focus on balance, even if it's just focus on balance in your finish. So if you start here and you're thinking about balance in your finish, usually that will smooth out people's swings.
And results with, how does that, with good balance?
Just better shots, better contact.
Awesome.
But just like any swing tip, it's good for some people, but it's not going to work for everyone. You know, that's just golf. It's everyone's individual. You got to kind of find what works for you. And that was another thing that Mr. Hogan taught me. It was always try this, try that. If it doesn't work, throw it away. We'll try something else tomorrow.
So that means when we step up to the ball, we don't have to try to remember every single tip we've ever heard?
No, you should really keep it to one.
Per round or per shot?
Well, I would go with one per round, but you know, one per shot, one swing thought per shot is, if you feel the need to change it, you can't. Well, you know, and that's, I'll give you one more thing. A
Please.
lot of times people say, you know, they'll hit their shot and they'll go, "Oh, I did this or I did that." And I always try to get them to focus rather than on what they did there, just keep focusing on what you're trying to do. You know, 'cause they're working on something and then they go, "Oh, I stood up." And I'm like, "Yeah, don't worry about that. Just focus on your swing thought, what you're trying to do."
Well, Annika's coaches, I don't know how much they were the coaches, but Lynn Marriott and Pia Nilsson, they were on the show many years ago, and she talked about the thought box and the shot box, which I absolutely love, which is step behind the ball, look down your line, and think about all the things that you want to do, visualize it, and then block it out of your head, step up to the ball and hit it. Which I always thought was really awesome.
There's a great story about Nancy Lopez when Ray Knight was caddying for her one time. She came into the locker room and she's like, oh, and she says, I'm getting up to the ball, and he's going, now you've got a downhill lie, and the wind's a little bit behind you, and it's an uphill shot. And she goes, I mean, I've already thought about all that stuff. I've already factored that in, and he's still talking to me when I get up to the ball.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, backing up.
So you never should have a third baseman as your caddy when you're on the tour,
There.
right?
Yeah, that's the moral of the story.
Especially if it's your husband.
Yeah. Oh,
Oh, right,
crazy.
Chris. Well, again, the book is called Mr. Hogan, The Man I Knew by Chris Cheddar, and it's KRISTSCHETTER and ChrisCheddar.com. What a fun conversation this was, Chris. I really look forward to having you back on the show and talking more about 18 Birdies if we get the chance.
You bet. Thank you very much for having me. It's always fun.
And she's right. It is so much fun to spend time with her and talk to her. I hope you enjoyed that. And you know, if you're inclined, you can watch the entire conversation with Chris on our YouTube channel, Golf Smarter TV, or at golfsmarter.com. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, I hope by now you know the drill. Click on the Hey Fred button. It's in the free Golf Smarter app, which you probably already have if you're listening to this on your mobile device, and of course at golfsmarter.com.